From the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Hazel Gaynor is my guest. Her two novels are both on my bookshelf this week. Both are historical novels, The Girl Who Came Home, a novel of the Titanic, which was published last year, and her new book, A Memory of Violets, a novel of London's flower sellers. Hazel Gaynor, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to chat to you.
You know, I don't want to give away too much to our listeners. I don't want to do any spoilers about your books. So why don't you start by telling us what you think potential readers need to know, and let's talk about both your books. So start with The Girl Who Came Home, if you would.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. We need to avoid those spoilers and let everyone find those endings. But
I know the Titanic sinks, but I don't want to...
Well, that's the thing, so. Yeah. That's what a lot of people have said. Where do you start with a story about the Titanic? And, you know, as a debut novel, really such a huge subject to approach, and I did feel quite daunted by that when I started out. But what I wanted to tell in my novel set around the Titanic was what I felt was a relatively unknown side of that amazing event, because I live in Ireland, and I knew there was a very strong connection between Ireland and Titanic. Titanic was built in Belfast, and her last port of call before she set out across the Atlantic was in Queenstown in County Cork. And so therefore, the very last passengers to get on Titanic, and also the very last people to get off Titanic, more importantly, was in Ireland. And what I wanted to do was explore the people who embarked on her in Ireland. And obviously, most of the passengers from Ireland were traveling in steerage class and third class. They were very poor and they were emigrating. So my story is about a young Irish girl who, without really wanting to, is having to leave home, to leave Ireland, to go and live with relatives in Chicago. There's no spoiler in saying to readers that she survives. And it's very much about what happened next. So we follow her on the Titanic, but it's also very much about what happened in the hours, the days, the weeks, the months, and then the lifetime of the survivors of that tragedy. So I just felt that aspect hadn't really been explored perhaps so much in the movies we all know of, and also in some of the novels that have been written. So
they made a movie?
The big one. So
I'm a fan. I like A Night to Remember. That's a great film also. There's been
fabulous movie. And actually, one of the books I used when I was researching was Walter Lord's A Night to Remember.
What a great book it is.
Amazing book.
I think it launched my Titanic fascination when I was young. And, you know, there were quite a few survivors. I remember each year they would get together and have a little survivor party. And now they're all gone.
That's it. Very sadly, the last survivors, there was a very well-known English lady, Malvina Dean, who was a baby at the time, and she was actually lifted from the ship onto a lifeboat in a sack because she was so small and couldn't be carried in her mother's arms. And, you know, these incredible, tragic stories. And we still actually are seeing, very recently, there was another letter that was actually written on the day that Titanic sank, on the 14th of April, that was sold at auction. You know, there's still memorabilia, there's still such a huge fascination with the event, and it's something I've felt very drawn to since I was a teenager and the wreck was discovered. And, you know, it just took a long time for that to percolate and for me to, I suppose, be confident enough to understand how I was going to tackle a novel about that event. And fortunately, it's been really well received, and people have enjoyed seeing a slightly different side to that tragic event. So I'm just delighted that the book was so well received.
Well, Hazel Gaynor, it's kind of cool that you have these two novels that have just come out at the same time, practically, although I assume that you wrote The Girl Who Came Home a while ago, maybe a couple of years ago, yeah?
Yeah, they were actually both written, and strangely, I had started work on A Memory of Violets first, but when I was, you know, I suppose as many aspiring writers are, you're sort of dabbling with ideas at the start and seeing where they go. And A Memory of Violets was going in a different direction to where it has ended up. And it was just one of those things. One day I just suddenly had this light bulb moment, if you like. And I was like, I really need to write a novel about Titanic. I'd been saying about it. And what I hadn't realized at that time was that in 2012 was the centenary of the event. So I kind of had to write The Girl Who Came Home quite quickly. So I think it just gave me the impetus to just get on with it, to get sat at the desk and keep writing, and do all the research around that. And that came out initially as a self-published book in 2012 to coincide with the centenary. And a year after that, one of those wonderful moments where the book was discovered by an agent and subsequently picked up by William Morrow, who are an imprint of HarperCollins, and they republished the book as a paperback in April 2014. But in the meantime, I had continued to write A Memory of Violet, so I was in a great position, if you like, that I had the two novels written, which is why they have come out, I suppose, relatively quickly in publishing terms, yeah.
Yeah, and it's great, because as soon as you're done with The Girl Who Came Home, you're going to want to read another one, and guess what? There's another one. A Memory of Violets, a novel of London's flower sellers. And, of course, you know, that's also a subject of a famous film, two famous films, I guess, if you consider Pygmalion and My Fair
Lady. Absolutely, yeah.
And so, again, you kind of were not quite as much as Titanic, but I guess the you had to approach a story in an original way. So how did you tell us a little bit about A Memory of Violets?
Yeah, so I suppose a lesser well-known subject this time. I'm very drawn to, obviously, history, and that's where I find my inspiration. And you're absolutely right. The real starting point for A Memory of Violets was Pygmalion and My Fair Lady and that amazing character Eliza Doolittle. And the real origins of my interest in that was the slightly embarrassing admission that I played the role of Eliza Doolittle in my high school musical when I was just 17 years old. And I had never really done anything like that before. So it was one of those really memorable events in my life. And I just loved her as a character. And obviously, in order to prepare for the musical, we also read the play, George Bernard Shaw's play. And I just was fascinated by this world of street sellers and these lives that people led. So that really was the origin, although again it's taken many years for me to go back and explore who were the real Eliza Doolittles. And obviously hers is a very romanticized story. It's very much a Cinderella story and a beautiful one for that. But what I wanted to research was how would somebody have ended up in that situation where they had no other choice in life but to walk the streets and sell posies of violets, of watercress, of roses to the ladies and gentlemen outside the theatres and the opera houses. And this contrast of life and wealth and status was just so astonishing. So that's really where the inspiration for the novel came from. And as with everything like this, you start from there, and what I particularly enjoy is really digging down and finding these lost voices and these incredible parts of our history, and really just came across some incredible stories and astonishing accounts of hardship and poverty that was experienced by these many young girls, young women, and many children, actually. That's what I found really quite hard to sort of read about in my research, was how many young children who were orphaned, who were blind, or who were physically disabled in some way were pounding the streets day in, day out, come rain or shine, barefooted, and they were selling little posies of flowers. And I just thought that was a wonderful emotional starting point for a novel to tell readers about those people and what happened to them, in my imagination anyway.
This is From the Bookshelf. I'm Gary Shapiro. We're talking with Hazel Gaynor, who's in a little bit, she's going to sing Wouldn't It Be Lovely, but first...
I'd have to do a warm-up first now, you know. I can still remember most of the script. It's quite scary, really, how much of an impact it had on me.
Well, when you memorize stuff, it sticks with you, right?
It really does, yeah. I'm a good girl, I am, that's what she says.
So there was a time in this world, you know, before cell phones and Facebook and even before movies and radio, and that's the time that you write about. And it's interesting because both of your books, although they move around in time, they're both set in exactly the same period, almost the same month.
That's sort of an uncanny coincidence, really.
So what draws you to the period?
I think firstly with The Girl Who Came Home, it was the event, really, that I started from, and that was, you know, 1912 when the Titanic sank. So that was really where I came to that story, was through the event rather than the era. And I think once you put yourself in a historical setting as a writer, you can feel very comfortable there, and you start to understand that world and how people spoke and what they wore and how they moved from one place to another, and, you know, just social etiquette, and you start to feel settled in that world. And I think because I was writing the two for a period of time, I was writing the two novels essentially in conjunction. So as a debut novelist, I think I felt comfortable there, you know, and I naturally was drawn into that era, partly, you know, it's romance in terms of the clothing that people wore and that sort of lost nostalgia of steamship travel, particularly with The Girl Who Came Home. But when I started to map out my time frames and my characters for A Memory of Violets, it seemed to just fit in the same era. And obviously, I suppose from My Fair Lady, Eliza Doolittle, that's where that book was written, and that's the era that's set in. So I suppose through coincidence, the two subjects settled and fit within that time frame. And it really does. It makes you feel you can take readers with you, and that's what I always want to do with a historical novel, is not in any way make the history clunky or far too distant to even grasp. I try to take my research, but to wear that quite lightly, if you like, so that the novel's authentic, but that people feel they're actually there in the moment on the Titanic or on the cobbled streets of Covent Garden with a small little flower cellar. And I, you know, I think that's a difficult thing to do, you know, to bring readers with you back in time.
Well, I think you did.
I seem to have done it so far.
I think you've done a great job with that. And, you know, it's really interesting in the books, especially in A Memory of Violets, how crowded it is and teeming with activity and people and smells. People didn't smell too good then.
They didn't really smell too good at all. I think, again, I was very conscious when I was writing this novel, the street scenes, the market scenes, that absolute chaos, as you say, there was such a rich tapestry of senses to draw on, and I really consciously wanted to bring that out. So I do write a lot about, you know, the decaying, rotting vegetables by the market stalls, yet also contrasted with the beautiful smell of lilies and English stocks and lavender and flesh oranges and, you know, the fish sellers. And I really did want to evoke that. I think it's a really fascinating palette, if you like, to draw from when you're writing. And, yeah, I think we sometimes forget that those worlds existed, and I wanted to take my readers into that, but also to, I suppose, give them a little bit of a respite from that, because you have to, you know, let people absorb that but then move out of it for a while. So I contrast that with the, I suppose, fairly domestic and settled environment of these wonderful flower homes where my main character Tilly goes to work, and she's sort of a domestic assistant and helps to run one of these homes where the flower sellers were taken off the streets by an entrepreneurial charitable man who taught them how to make artificial flowers, so their work wasn't dependent on the street or the weather, and he gave them a totally different chance in life, and that was all very true, that all happened. So there's sort of light and shade in there, hopefully, that, you know, readers can step out of the market for a little while, because it is quite harrowing, it is quite difficult, and I didn't want people to just be depressed, you know, reading the book. So there's lots of characters outside of that world in the homes as well, so hopefully another part of the novel for people to explore and find something new in there.
What could be depressing about poverty and sinking ships and dying people?
I know, I don't know what's wrong with me. My husband says, why are you drawn to all this tragedy? And I really don't know. I suppose it says something about me. I think, you know, there is such it's an emotional hook, isn't it? It's a really emotional starting point. And I think as a writer, you really just want to touch people and to make them feel that they really care about these people. And, you know, not that I deliberately want to put my characters in peril, but often, you know, that's, it's quite true. People often are in peril, and it's through peril that they step up and they find themselves and they make things better for themselves. So it's an interesting setting to place your writing in, yeah.
Well, of course, the Titanic story, the subject of your novel, The Girl Who Came Home, is, you know, it's so endlessly fascinating, the what-ifs, you know, that you constantly run through your head. You know, so, you know, it's a great topic for a novel.
That's it, and I think, you know, especially with something like Titanic, I think that's why there is this endless fascination, because we do all partly wonder, what would we do, you know, if we were stood on the deck and the ship was sinking, in order to save our child, could we pass them to a total stranger? Could we leave our husband? Would we have rowed back to save the people in the water at the prospect of our own lifeboat being capsized? So, you know, I think with any tragedy like that, there is that sort of human morbid fascination, and we wonder. And obviously now, like you say, with the internet and with fabulous museums and so much memorabilia, we can see these things. We can touch things that existed at that time, and it makes it all very, very real. And really, it's only 100 years ago. It's not very long ago in the big scheme of things, and I think that's what makes it feel more accessible and more real. So you, although it's a, you know, distant historical event in many ways, it really isn't.
It doesn't feel too distant to me. That brings up an interesting point. I mean, you live in the modern world. You have young kids. They want to hear Uptown Funk. So
you heard that.
Yeah. So how do you immerse yourself in an era as a writer? What do you do to really get in there?
That's a great question, and I don't know if I have the solution to that yet. I think all I can do is do my best and approach it for what works for me. And I do have, you know, a very contrasting life of the mornings are at the desk writing while the boys are at school, and then they come home and, you know, chaos reigns in the house, quite frankly. So my writing time is quite compartmentalized, and I just might not be in the right mood to write, but I have to, because that's my writing time, and you have to protect that quite fiercely, or I genuinely don't think you'd ever get anything written. I do an awful lot of research. I read books, non-fiction books set in the era or around the event that I'm writing about. I dip in and out of novels that are set in that era, because you don't want to influence your own writing too much, but it's interesting to be in your head in that era. Obviously, I do some research on the internet. I watch old movie reels to look at people actually physically being mobile and moving, so it's not just a static photograph. I'd go to museums. So I think as much as you can, you really just try and inhabit that world, and especially when you're writing characters, and my characters in A Memory of Violets, I have this very poorly educated little flower seller. She speaks to us in the first person, so I had to really get into her head and think, how would she speak? What would her vocabulary be like? What would her language, her form of expression be like? Then I have that contrasted with a young lady from the north of England, from the Lake District, who would have had more education. And then I have somebody at the total other end of the social spectrum who's a very wealthy, privileged lady. And when you're writing each of those characters, you really have to put the others aside, and you have to act them in a way. You know, I think I do imagine myself being that person, and I often, it would be quite funny, I think, if you could see me writing, I pull facial expressions, and I grimace, and I hold things in the way my character is holding them.
That's because you're an actress.
That's it. It must have been in there somewhere, maybe in a different life. And I see my characters very much like I'm watching a movie or something on stage, and I think it's the only way it works for me anyway, is just to not, for example, I wouldn't read a very different period of history. I might read a totally different contemporary novel when I'm writing one of my own, but I wouldn't be reading, for example, about Tudor England when I'm writing in the Victorian or Edwardian era, because I think it just becomes confusing. So I just try and keep myself in that world, and stay honest to how people were and how they were talking and thinking at that time.
We're chatting with Hazel Gaynor, and she has two new books. The first one is called The Girl Who Came Home, a novel of the Titanic, and her latest, A Memory of Violets, a novel of London's flower sellers. Are your boys at all interested in your books? Have you read them out loud?
I haven't read them out loud, but they're 7 and 9 years old now, and it's interesting. They are really fascinated by history, and I think that's what's come through. They know an awful lot about Titanic, which is lovely. We have a great museum up in Belfast, and we went there, and I've talked to them a lot. I've found lots of lovely children's books, which make the event more accessible to them. My niece is 15. She's read the books, which is just lovely. They do. They understand what I'm doing, and I read books from being a very, very young child. My mum and dad always encouraged us to read, and I strongly believe there's a link between reading and writing. And I just want to instill that in my own children, and they're great little readers, and it's just a delight to see. So I have copies of the books signed for them each on a bookshelf, so when they're old enough, hopefully they'll read them. And it's a lovely thing to think that there's a little bookshelf of mummy's books building up for them, which is great, you know, and hopefully some of that interest in creative writing will pass on to them as well.
I was wondering if you have a sister. I mean, there's a sister relationship that's so beautiful in the book.
I do have a sister. I do, and it's fascinating. That's again one of the themes of The Memory of Violets, and thank you for saying how you've noticed that, because I really did want to explore that, and again this came very much from my research and reading an astonishing piece of work by a man called Henry Mayhew, who back in the late 1800s literally walked the streets of London and interviewed street sellers and collected this amazing, rich, taste of what life was like. And he interviewed two orphaned flower sellers, watercress sellers, actually. And when I read their accounts, I knew immediately, that's it. I want to tell their story. Who are these two little girls? And I had also, through research, discovered there were lots of very poor Irish living in London at the time who had come over to find work. So I set my story around these two little sisters, Irish, who have nothing really other than each other, and then discovered the story of this man who helped the flower sellers, so I took their story from there. But then my other character, Tilly, in contrast, she has a very troubled relationship with her own sister. So I do very much explore what it's like to be a sister and how some sisters can't bear to be apart and how others just find it a very difficult relationship. And fortunately, I have a fabulous relationship with my sister. She's a couple of years older than me. And it was interesting, actually, because I was already going down that route of sisters being a theme of the book. And she's an English literature and language teacher, and she'd sent me a poem by a Renaissance poet, I mean, she was a little bit later than that, Christina Rossetta, a poem called Goblin Market, and that has many, many themes to it, but one of the themes in there is sisters, and there's a little phrase from that at the start of A Memory of Violets. It was always there, I think, but it's an interesting relationship to explore. I think, you know, we often talk about romance between men and women, but, the love between family and or not, as the case may be, is also a really interesting place to explore relationships.
Interesting. Oh, yeah, because you don't choose your family, right?
And that's exactly what the book is exploring, that you don't choose your family. And what we find through Tilly, her relationship with her sister and her family is kind of unraveled as we move through the novel, and she has discovered the diary of Florrie, one of these little flower sellers. And there isn't a spoiler here, but her and her sister Rosie become separated. So Florrie is devastated because she's lost her little sister who meant everything to her. She's desperately worried for her, and she spends her life really wondering what happened and trying to find her. And 40 years on, my character Tilly discovers this diary where all this outpouring of grief is hidden. And through, reading Florrie's story and trying to find out what happened to her little sister Rosie, we start to unravel more about Tilly and her relationship with her sister Esther. So hopefully there's a mystery, there's a little bit of a what's happening here through the book, and sort of immersed around the world of flowers and the sense of a scent of violets, which is where the title of the novel comes from as well.
I'd love to see a movie. I think there should be a movie. So,
So would I.
Yeah, that'd be great. They're always listening to me on From the Bookshelf. Once I say there should be a movie, they're right on it. So
I think it would make a beautiful movie. So who knows? That would be just a dream come true, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Now it seems to me that there's going to be more. I mean, I have now. I've got my Hazel Gaynor part of my bookshelf, so I need more. So are you working
you need
on?
More.
Are you working on another one now?
I am, absolutely, and I, you know, this is such a whirlwind, really, from where I've started, and it's just fabulous. I feel so blessed to be doing what I'm doing, and I'm working on a third novel, which isn't set in the same era, interestingly. I'm moving into the 1920s, just after the First World War, so I'm exploring, again, very much set around, I suppose, female relationships and how women had been affected by the war. And I'm taking a character who works in one of the very prestigious London hotels but wants more from her life, and is contrasted with that amazingly glamorous world of theatre and music halls. So lots of fabulous characters to explore. And I really did want to understand more myself about the Great War, and about how society was affected, and why people, you know, the flapper era, why did people go crazy, what was that all about, and what were people searching for. So I'm reading an awful lot of fascinating accounts of the young girls and flappers and theatre, but also, you know, women who were still quite repressed in domestic servitude, and how they wanted to lift themselves out of that, having done these very different roles during the war, working in the factories and things like that. So really different era to explore, but I'm absolutely loving it. It's all Downton Abbey, and it's beautiful dresses, and it's wonderful. I'm really excited to be writing it.
Well, I can't wait to read it, and I hope you'll come back and talk to us again on From the Bookshelf. My guest is Hazel Gaynor. She has two new books, A Memory of Violets, a novel of London's flower sellers, and The Girl Who Came Home, a novel of the Titanic. Hazel Gaynor, thanks so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Thank you so much, Gary, and if anybody would like to get in touch with me at all, I have a website, which is hazelgaynor.com, and I'm also on Twitter at Hazel Gaynor and on Facebook at Hazel Gaynor Books, and I love to hear from readers. Absolutely don't hesitate to drop me a line or get in touch, because that's what it's all about, hearing from readers at the end of the day.
Well, that's it for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I hope you had a good time and that you'll come back and see us again next week. I want to thank my guest, Hazel Gaynor. Her two novels are called The Girl Who Came Home, a novel of the Titanic, and A Memory of Violets, a novel of London's flower sellers. Be sure to check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, and you can like us on Facebook. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.